Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Fro Wrestling Podcast. I got a lot to cover in this episode. While I'm recording this, SmackDown is going on live. I'm trying to keep my attention divided between what I need to tell you about yesterday, the pay-per-view, daily news, and trying to keep up with what's going on at SmackDown. But hey, my schedule is nuts this week, so I'm trying to get you everything all at once. So do not forget to get voting with our 256 tag team tournament that's out there. The links are live right now through our website at www.frolifeplanning.com/fanpoll and knock out the 7 blocks of tag teams that remain in your tag team tournament. Some very interesting matchups in this round. I'm very excited to see what you guys do with those pairings. So let's get going with today's news. We're going to look first at the pay-per-view, because it's not since the Undertaker streak was defeated have I seen so many people react a certain way towards the outcome of a match, and we will get to that at the end. I'm going to go in order of importance, or at least what I thought the importance was, instead of the actual run order, because I want to react to things a little differently. Starting with Ty Dillinger and Aiden English, you know, you expect Ty Dillinger to get a big win here, and he does, and that's what's to be expected. My concern here is this: missed opportunity. Not in this match. Ty Dillinger clearly is going to be a main roster star. He's building a following. He's looking great. He's performing great. What I'm talking about is, and I blogged about this before, Aiden English would be a fantastic addition to the 205 Live roster. He really should have moved over during the Superstar Shakeup and gone to Raw and been a part of that brand. Now his character is just stuck in this ridiculous character, and it would have been nice to see him be able to use and showcase the talents that he has clearly honed in his experience with War Wrestling Entertainment. Matches is, you know, what you expect it to be. Squash match. Ty Dillinger wins relatively quickly. I'm going to move on to the Luke Harper versus Eric Rowan match. This match to me was just filler going into the matches. I was hoping this was a way for them to grow Eric Rowan's character. Now that he had that really awkward talking SmackDown, talking smack segment, it really looked like they were going to try to push his character for a change. He goes into this pay-per-view with Luke Harper, who's gotten very little build-up for the last several weeks. He goes from being potentially the challenger for the world title at WrestleMania, having that interesting ending to his battle royal with AJ Styles. He goes in, he goes into a match with Styles. He looks solid. He looks like he's a main event player. Then you bury him for the last 2 months. Now you put him in this program with Eric Rowan, where he loses clean last week on SmackDown. And then you put him at the pay-per-view and you have Luke Harper beat Eric Rowan. I don't understand the booking in this feud, unless somewhere down the line you're looking to reunite these two as a tag team. And I actually think the creepiness of Eric Rowan in that SmackDown Talking Smack episode really would have lent well if they brought in the Sister Abigail thing, have him have rescued her bones or her essence or whatever from the fire when Randy Orton torched the place, and you could have him use her as a transition thing into a much bigger character. And more importantly, if you ever decide to do something with Bray Wyatt again, it would give you an instant feud with Bray Wyatt coming back angry at Rowan and Harper for taking Sister Abigail. The next one I want to talk about is Sami Zayn and Baron Corbin. This is a match that I don't understand also. I was really confused with WWE's booking of this pay-per-view, and I'm going to tell you why. And not because it was a bad pay-per-view. It wasn't a very bad pay-per-view. I don't think there was as many people into it as could have been or should have been, but I don't understand the booking from a long-term standpoint. If you're trying to build Sami Zayn to be a world championship contender, then I get it. But I've never gotten that feeling from this brand. I don't. I get the feeling that Sami Zayn will be eternally locked into a United States championship or less level performer. I don't see him in their eyes as being a world champion. So Baron Corbin on the other side, I actually think is a world champion contender in their mind, at least as a challenger, maybe not getting the title, but he clearly looks like somebody who they may want to put the belt on at some point. And then they have him lose to Sami Zayn. I don't understand that. The thought process a few weeks ago was that they were going to build Baron Corbin to be like this unstoppable tough guy, kind of like Braun Strowman, but on the SmackDown brand, and later in the year give him a shot at the title. I don't know how you do that if you have him losing to Sami Zayn. So again, I don't understand this. What surprised me the most was probably the fact that Shinsuke Nakamura versus Dolph Ziggler kicked off the show, outside of the Dillinger Aiden English thing. I actually expected that that could have been the main event. Like, all the promotional materials about Backlash was all about Nakamura, and then he's in the opening pay-per-view match. A little bizarre, if you ask me. And I felt like their match didn't get very much time. Nakamura is capable of some incredible stuff, as is Dolph Ziggler. I don't care what anybody likes to say about Dolph. Some people have said he has a limited moveset or whatever. He can deliver a big match. He's fantastic in the ring. These two should have had a good 20 minutes to go. They should have let him go out there and just tear the house down. Instead, this felt very rushed. It didn't feel genuine. It didn't showcase Nakamura's real strong side. And instead, we're left wanting more of Nakamura. And in a little bit, in a strange way, wanting more of Dolph Ziggler. The women's six-man tag team match. Another match that was just strange for me. I mean, I kind of expected the welcoming committee to win just because they put together a faction, and whenever you give a faction a name, they have to get pushed somehow. I don't like Charlotte being defeated or Becky Lynch. I would have had Naomi get beaten because they haven't done anything with her character, and she's the women's champion. You have whoever you can defeat Naomi, and then they're the next challenger. I don't like seeing Charlotte or Becky Lynch take a loss in any fashion. The match itself, It almost felt like harkened back to the Diva days where they didn't let these ladies tell a story. And let's face it, the six women that are in this match are capable of so much more than what they let them do in this match. They actually gave them a little bit of time too, so it's not that they didn't have time to perform, but whoever was putting this match together really didn't let them come out and shine, and it's really a shame because it was a missed opportunity. The tag team championship match was one of the highlights and the letdown of the entire pay-per-view for me, and I'll explain. The highlight part, the whole broomstick with the big Hogan mustache, bald head, and the blonde hair. I was sitting there watching this with a very good friend of mine, and he was the first one to think of, you know, this is almost like a tongue-in-cheek reference to Kenny Omega being the cleaner and Hulk Hogan wanting to join the Bullet Club that was in the news last week. That's kind of what this looked like. And in all reality, they put on a pretty good show. And by the end of the match, Breezango had the people behind them. And the Usos were getting some major, major heat when they won this match. Now, for those who understand long-term booking, their plan is for the New Day to come in and challenge the Usos. I get that. I understand it. But sometimes WWE needs to cultivate and foster the things that are natural and organic. And this was. The fans totally embraced Tyler Breeze's goofy character. And I don't think I've ever seen Fandango look better. He looked like he was ready to go. He looked like a premium wrestler in this match. I was really impressed with him. And I almost wish the New Day wasn't coming to SmackDown just for a moment. Just for a moment, just so these guys could have had their moment in the sun and gotten a tag team championship. Because I think after the way they performed in this match, they deserved the tag team championship. Instead, we get stuck with the Usos, keeping the titles a little longer until the New Day can come in and challenge them. If the New Day doesn't take those tag team titles, this whole tag team thing they've done for the last 8 months is a joke. And I don't know where American Alpha is. They were supposed to be so important, and they've done essentially nothing. They had no role in the show. And I'm there. Talk about a flop. They have done a horrible job, not just with American Alpha, with multiple talents that they bring up from NXT who they just don't know what to do with. And it takes a good year or two before they get some traction because their writing people just don't get it. These NXT talents are phenomenal. You got to give them something of substance to do, and they're just not doing it. The match for the United States Championship, Kevin Owens versus AJ Styles, this held the promise of something special. We got a great great matchup. Here is the frustration. The frustration is this had match of the year candidacy written all over it, only a night after Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate had match of the year at NXT TakeOver Chicago. And instead of having this classic mat action, we have this countout win at the end. Yeah, I understood his foot got stuck in the wires of the table and whatnot, but you could have really done something special with these two, and you didn't have to have an end or a blow-off to this feud. You could have ended this in a lot of different ways, where they both go down and they get counted out, or a double pin, or something that furthered the storyline, didn't make the championship change hands, made the match meaningful, and let these guys really showcase everything they had to show. They did get to show some. Like I said, this was easily, in my opinion, match of the night. You really have to wonder if AJ Styles and Kevin Owens, back like with, you know, Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, if they got an Iron Man match, think of what they can do. When Kevin Owens debuted on the main roster and went against John Cena, they let him just run with it, and it was phenomenal. Probably the best match Cena's had in 10 years. But in this scenario, AJ Styles, one of the best, if not the best worker in the world, and Kevin Owens, who's one of the hardest workers in the world, they really could have done more than they did. And don't get me wrong, it still was a phenomenal match. It just could have been better. The main event, I pushed off on purpose because I don't even know how to react to this. Because I know that I'm going to get comments either way, no matter what I say. Here's the truth. Truth is, the world works with money. India has the largest percentage of the WWE's online universe is in India. They have to appeal to that Indian crowd. Now, my problem with it is Jinder Mahal's a bad guy. And how do you appeal to the people of India when you constantly make their ethnic character a bad guy? He should be a good guy. And I don't know how you do that and give him the world title. I have no problem with Jinder Mahal winning the world championship, because let's face it, there have been worse people than Jinder Mahal that have won that world title. In the last 5 weeks, you've seen Jinder Mahal cleanly defeat Sami Zayn, AJ Styles. I don't know why this would come off as such a shock if you believe that AJ Styles is capable of beating Randy Orton, or that Sami Zayn would ever be capable of beating Randy Orton. I really would prefer that Randy Orton would have had a better program with, say, AJ Styles heading into SummerSlam, or something with Randy Orton and potentially Rusev when he comes back. But the piece that I think everybody is missing out on is Jinder Mahal has been built up here as this bad guy from India who's angry about the way his people are treated. What if, just follow me on this ridiculous thread I'm going to throw at you. What if when Rusev comes back, you have him jump Jinder Mahal? Have him go after Jinder Mahal. Have these people that Jinder Mahal have been complaining about come out and come to his aid. They beat up the Singh brothers, and Jinder Mahal is laying them out, and somebody like Randy Orton makes the save, or somebody like AJ Styles or Sami Zayn or somebody like that makes the save. You could instantly flip Jinder and have Jinder versus Rusev, which was a feud that we kind of thought was going to happen at one point anyways, and you could actually transition that world championship to Rusev, who is much more believable as a champion, but you could lend some intrigue and mystique to Jinder Mahal's character, and what I think is the most important thing, you could make Jinder Mahal a hero to his people, the ones that he's speaking to every week. You got to have something authentic like that for those people. Right now, every match Jinder Mahal wins is because the Singh brothers get involved. You need something where he gets a legit win without that. Ever since, the only time I saw him get a nice win was the one over Sami Zayn in the number one contendership match, which shocked everybody. But I've never seen shock and awe like I did at this pay-per-view. That was out of this world, out of control. The reaction from the fans was priceless. Going to move on to Raw. I'm going to try to go through this relatively quickly. I love the in-ring segment with Bray Wyatt at the beginning to kick off the show. You know, his vignettes are something of just masterful work. I've never seen somebody on the mic like him. You enter Roman Reigns, people aren't real thrilled to see the guy. That's just not going to happen. And then, of course, they get put into a match to kick off the show. Good way to start the show. I actually enjoyed the match. Samoa Joe getting involved kind of bugged me a little bit. Obviously, it was there for a reason to set up the main event later in the show, but Samoa Joe's character, that's all he does is come out and attack people. Like, his matches have become secondary, and Samoa Joe's character has kind of gotten lost in the shuffle, and I don't like it. We get, of course, you have Seth Rollins come out. That's going to set up the tag team match later in the show. Again, we're almost to that point where we're seeing the same matches every week, you know? I don't want to see that. The Akira Tozawa-Aria Daivari match, it was short. but it was effective. Tozawa, I don't know what was up with that outfit he was wearing, but it was amazing. My kids love the outfit. You know, he looks great. He's very talented. The only shame of the whole thing is Tozawa is never going to be big enough to be considered a main eventer. So I hope they get off their keister and start giving the guy a shot at Neville or something of that nature, because I think that would be great. Speaking of Neville in the Cruiserweight division, I do not want to forget to mention Chris Jericho on Twitter talking about the Cruiserweight division and saying that he thinks that they should split up Enzo and Cass and put Enzo into the Cruiserweight division to take the championship from Neville because he's so over with the fans, even though he doesn't do a lot in the ring. Interesting thought process. I'm not going to comment on it further. If you guys have a comment about that, please, by all means, put it into the comment section on the page. Backstage, we have a Sasha Banks discussion. Alicia Fox is there with Noam Dar. I couldn't care less about this. I don't have any interest in Sasha Banks and Alicia Fox. They've buried Alicia Fox for so many years. You can't ever take her seriously. You have Elias Sampson. He's going to be out. He's finally going to get his first match. And he starts singing, which I thought the singing was pretty good. I'll be honest with you. I thought the guitar playing was pretty good. I thought the match with Dean Ambrose was actually going very well. I really enjoyed watching Dean Ambrose and Elias Sampson. My issue is the ending. You had Miz come out from the commentary area, and he goes over and he kicks Elias Sampson to give him the disqualification win, but that way he keeps the championship on Ambrose so he could still face him for the title at the pay-per-view. He could have kicked champion and gotten a disqualification win too. It didn't really matter. I thought it was really stupid. But I loved Elias Sampson's his whole presentation. He looked great. He looked like he was ready for prime time. I loved the fan reaction when he was singing. I thought he really got some heat. And I think he is somebody to keep an eye on, because if they cultivate him the right way, he could be a legitimate contender at some point in the rather near future. He doesn't have to wait too long. I think he really has the right look. He's got the right moveset to really be impressive on the main roster. We move on to the backstage, and we find Enzo is like on the floor comatose. Big Cass is telling, you know, Kurt Angle's promising they'll get down to the bottom of who this was, and Cass is threatening that he better figure it out before he does. Which, by the way, if people pay very close attention to Easter eggs in TV shows and movies, we may already know who those people were who perpetrated the attack on Enzo. Because if you go back earlier in the show and you watch that Sasha Banks interview in the back that meant nothing, the whole purpose to that interview may have had nothing to do with Sasha Banks. If you look in the background, you will see the Revival run across in the back. In my opinion, they did that on purpose, so the Revival will be revealed as the ones who attacked Enzo. Since they are due back shortly from the injury, it'll be great to see the Revival back on TV. It's something I think that Raw is missing, is a really solid tag team outside of the Hardys and Sheamus and Cesaro. They need something with some new flavor, some new spice. We have a Finn Balor discussion in the ring. There is a wonderful exchange with he and Paul Heyman. I think the fans who have theorized about Brock versus Balor have not really gotten excited until this moment, when we're in the middle of a Finn Balor interview and all of a sudden you hear Paul Heyman's voice. The place lit up. The people would love to see it. It's bizarre to me to think of a 290-pound guy versus a guy who looks like a glorified cruiserweight, but I think they could pull it off. I really do. I think, you know, people need to stop underestimating Finn Balor and his ability to work with people. I think he'd put on a great match with Brock. I don't obviously think he's going to win, because they're trying to build Brock up to be this unstoppable tough guy, but I do believe that the match would have some merit and some quality. Finn Balor goes on to face Carl Anderson with Luke Gallows at ringside. He defeats with the coup de grace. I actually hate this. I don't want to see Gallows and Anderson getting buried by Finn Balor. If anything, keep them off TV and at some point bring them out to help Finn Balor and reunite the club, the original club. Because right now, Gallows and Anderson are a glorified comedy act again. They're on the sideline, just like Enzo and Cass or Golden Truth was before they broke up. You know, they don't have any importance. And I have a problem with that, because Gallows and Anderson are one of the most decorated tag teams in the world, active wrestlers, and they're just not getting used for anything of any substance. We have our Sasha Banks Alicia Fox rematch. This one's an easy win for Sasha Banks. Of course, after the match, Noam Dar gets in her face and she slaps him, which leads to Alicia Fox hitting her with the scissor kick. What I thought would be interesting, and I think they may be going this direction, Sasha Banks doesn't really have anybody to wrestle right now. If you think about it, she's already done her bit with Nia Jax, and obviously Alexa Bliss is tied up with Bayley. But can you see the scenario of maybe Sasha Banks versus Noam Dar? I would like that. I think that would actually draw. I think that'd be a good, interesting intergender thing. I know WWE's not big on the intergender thing. I get that. It's almost like the Ellsworth versus Becky Lynch thing they're kind of teasing over on SmackDown. I'd be okay with it, though. I think it would be interesting. We go to our next segment. There's Kalisto and Apollo Crews are in the back. There, you know, Kalisto's actually asking Apollo Crews if he's the one who laid out Enzo after he kicked him in the head last week. Titus O'Neil comes in. He's trying to sign Kalisto. Kalisto blows him off. So now he sets up a match with Kalisto and Apollo Crews to take place in the ring in a few moments, which they're building up this thing where Apollo Crews is fighting all of Titus O'Neil's battles. I don't like that. I actually kind of had a thing, a moment where I thought the Apollo Crews Titus O'Neil thing could really work. Titus needs something. The guy's too, he's so big, and he's actually relatively skilled. They are wasting that guy. And I know he loves what he's doing in the wrestling world, so he's never going to just drop it and give it up. But man, like, can you imagine if somebody actually gave this guy a legitimate shot? I don't know. They had an interview with Goldust. It really kind of bored me. I think they were trying to go for the original Goldust feel with the promos he used to cut when he first came to WWE back in like the mid-90s. He's not that guy anymore. So yeah, when you've been beaten so many times in the last 2 years and you've been made to look like a lower mid-card fool, it's really hard to take you seriously now. It's just a personal thing. Alexa Bliss is out. She's talking about what she's going to do to Bayley, and you know they come out and they have their whole exchange. You know, there's obviously going to be issues with the kendo stick. You know, I still don't like that, the kendo stick on a pole thing. I think that's weak. I think they could have done a whole lot more with it. We get our Kalisto-Apollo Crews match with Titus O'Neil outside the ring. Kalisto actually picks up the clean win over Apollo Crews, which I thought was interesting. Now he's got wins over Apollo Crews and Braun Strowman in the last month. Unless you're going to do something really important with Kalisto, like give him a match against Neville, since we've seen Aries and Neville to death, I don't know what they're doing. You know, I wish they would hurry up and move him over to Cruiserweight and give him that championship. He might actually lend some credibility to that title. Not that Neville hasn't, but Neville hasn't faced anybody except for Austin Aries that had any kind of importance. You haven't seen Neville and TJ Perkins. That would actually be a good match. You know, we saw it way back when he first won the title, but haven't seen it in forever. I need to see some substance from the Cruiserweight division. We got Matt Hardy and Cesaro out. Matt Hardy's going to pick up the win here. This is leading to Cesaro and Sheamus taking those tag titles. I'm telling you that right now. They haven't won any of the matches against the Hardys yet, so when they finally do get one, it's going to be at the pay-per-view. And to be honest with you, I'm over that too. It's the same matches every week. We get Tony Nese against Austin Aries. Nese has Neville at ringside. I don't know why. I can't get over how much Tony Nese looks like Neville, unless that's what they're going for, which obviously they're not, because after Austin Aries picks up the win, Neville attacks Tony Nese. Feel bad for Tony Nese. His character's getting lost in the shuffle, too, and he's another one who, if you watch Progress Wrestling or ICW, has had some killer matches around the world, and he's just not getting used worth a darn. And then, of course, we have our tag team main event. We have Bray Wyatt and Samoa Joe against Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns. Very solid match. Didn't go long enough, but I'm okay with that. The end of the match sees the Coquina clutch locked in on Seth Rollins, where he passes out. Great ending to the match. I really would have liked to have seen Samoa Joe turn on Bray Wyatt on camera, but that didn't happen. They kind of teased it a little bit, had the two nose-to-nose. Backstage, Finn Balor's watching on the monitor, and he says he wants a match for next week, and Angle makes it a triple threat. So Samoa Joe is going to take on Finn Balor, is going to take on Bray Wyatt. Ought to be an interesting Raw next week. In other news, and I want to make sure I cover as much of this stuff as I can, because I am getting short on time, that women's tournament that we've talked about for weeks now, they now officially gave it a name. It is the Mae Young Classic. 32 women will compete, and they officially made the announcement. The tickets are on sale. It'll be at Full Sail University. It'll take place on July 13th and 14th. If you are in that area, by all means, check it out. It should be amazing. Other news, they're actually trying to plan a women's Money in the Bank match at the pay-per-view. I think that would be a fantastic idea. The question is, would you do women from one brand, the other brand, both brands? Like, there's a lot you could do here. This is a pay-per-view that should not be the SmackDown-only event, and it is right now. It's slated to be a SmackDown-branded event. I don't like that. I think that Money in the Bank, a briefcase opportunity at the World Championship, should be both brands. Even if you have two different Money in the Bank matches, because you have two world champions now, it's like giving the gimmick to one show. Are you going to give a different gimmick to the other show? Like, is Elimination Chamber only going to be a Raw thing, or that's only going to be a SmackDown thing? Like, I don't like that. The gimmicks should belong to both brands. I hated the way they did that earlier this year. I hate it that they're doing it again here. And both went to SmackDown, which is even more bizarre to me. You know, Extreme Rules, that's not really a gimmick so much as just a concept behind the whole pay-per-view. So I'm not a big fan of this, but I am thrilled to see that the women will get an opportunity to showcase their talent on a platform that they have yet to have done. In other news, and I'm getting close to the end of SmackDown. You know what? Why don't we do that? Why don't we cover some of the SmackDown situation? SmackDown, I was curious to see what they were going to do after giving Jinder Mahal the title. There was word originally that Randy Orton was going to lose the title to Rusev. Now that Jinder has it, I don't know how they're going to pull that off. But they are going to have Randy Orton invoke his rematch clause. He's going to face Jinder Mahal for the championship at the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. The fans just aren't into it. You know, it's really a shame. There will be five people in the Money in the Bank ladder match. They're AJ Styles, Baron Corbin, Sami Zayn, Dolph Ziggler, and Kevin Owens. My concern there is that the fifth man, let me back up. When Kevin Owens came out, he wasn't actually announced as a participant. He just came out. Shane actually tells the production truck to kill his music, and he ends up having and introduce the fifth man as Shinsuke Nakamura, which I kind of feel like is a way to set up the match between Owens and Nakamura, which is the rumor to be Nakamura's first championship feud. You know, Owens walks out just assuming he's going to be in the Money in the Bank, and here it's Nakamura. So now I expect Nakamura not to win. I expect somebody like Baron Corbin to win, because they want to push that guy to the main event level anyways, and I don't see a great way to do that the way they've booked him lately. Styles has already been there. Zayn's not ready for it yet, and Ziggler, I hate to say it, but they treat him like he's too old. You know, we'll have to see how they book all this, but I love the setup for the Nakamura versus Kevin Owens situation, because I think that is going to be phenomenal. We get to get a tag team match with Becky Lynch and Charlotte. They're going to go against Carmella and Natalya. Look, at some point you had to get Naomi and Tamina out of this scenario. I'm not knocking either one of them, but the truth is Charlotte and Becky Lynch have this bond or this friendship that they've cultivated on TV. And at some point, that's got to explode into a feud. And the only way to get that going is if you get the two in the ring together and get the matches, get through the whole babyface side of things. Pair them off a few weeks, have them lose a few matches. They won this one, but have them lose a few matches leading up to where Charlotte will turn on Becky Lynch, and we can get the match that I think a lot of people are waiting to see. The match of the night that really irritates me is the Sami Zayn versus Baron Corbin. This match doesn't even get started. Sami Zayn rolls him up as soon as the bell starts. He pins him right away. Again, what are you doing? Why are you killing Baron Corbin's character? It's ridiculous. You know, he's going to go obliterate Sami Zayn after that. I don't like it. I need Baron Corbin to be booked a lot stronger, especially if you plan on putting Money in the Bank on him. I really think that there's an opportunity there, but you can't keep killing his character. The fans will turn against him because the fans are tired of seeing horrible booking. And WWE has made earned a PhD in bad booking in the last 6 months or so. So hopefully they figure things out. There is a backstage segment that is awesome, and I think it's more than anything, I think it's a teaser for WrestleMania next year. AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura, they rehash some of their history. It's obvious that the fans are really ready for this. When you see the two people show up, the ovation in the crowd or in the audience is phenomenal. I really hope that Vince doesn't screw that up. Let these two guys call their own match, put together their own match, and just keep your hands off. Keep all the creative people out. These two guys can put together a all-time great match, one of those 6-star quality matches. Don't let WWE creative anywhere near that match. Let these two figure it out and let it be on the biggest stage of them all, even though we all want to see the match as soon as possible. There is another fashion file, I'm not going to lie. They are becoming some of my favorite segments in the shows. They want to turn over their badges after losing to the Usos, which, sad. I love what they're doing. I don't want to see their tag team go by the wayside, but after last night, what they did, I thought they deserve more. It's announced that they're going to be in singles action later. We do have the championship celebration, and you got everybody out in their Punjabi dress. The Bollywood boys are out, or the Singh brothers. Sorry, I got to try to get used to that. Here comes the the 50th WWE champion in history. You think they might have thought about that before they gave it to him, because now no matter what you do the rest of your life, he's always going to go down in history as the 50th WWE champion, as the guy who was a jobber and 3 months later became world champion. It's expected, but you can hear from the people, they absolutely hate the fact that they put the championship on this guy. And I'm not talking about like that bad guy heel heat or like that white heat from like you're a really great heel. This is just disgusted heat. And it's a shame too, because Jinder doesn't deserve that. He's a great talent, but they gave him the title too soon. He talks about India celebrating him as champion and all that kind of stuff. The USA chant gets going. Him speaking Punjabi is fine. It's no different to Nikolai Volkov back in 1985 and 86. But I hope they realize that they're really treading on shallow water here. They got to be careful with him. This could blow up in their faces. We got the Usos taking on each half of Breezango. Tyler Breeze wins. Fandango wins. You know, they really should get a shot at the tag team championship. So they do that. And, of course, they lose again. I don't know what you're doing burying a tag team that the fans are really getting behind. I think it's really a shame. We get our match with Shinsuke Nakamura and AJ Styles taking on Kevin Owens and Dolph Ziggler. You know, the match is going to be won by Styles and Nakamura. This could have been a lot better. They didn't have enough time to really do everything that they could have done. Then again, this is a pay-per-view quality match. So, you know, there's a lot that they could have done here. But from my understanding is there were some technical difficulties there at the arena. So I don't know if that affected their booking of the match, but the match itself, pretty solid. Nakamura drilling Owens, dropped the champion with his Kinshasa for the pin. I'm a big fan of just calling it what it was in New Japan, that Bomae or whatever they called it over there. I don't know why we got to change names with everything, but Nakamura getting the win over Owens, clearly setting up that feud. It'll be curious to see how that goes down. Thank you everyone for tuning in. I'm Fred Froelich, better known as Mr. Fro. I'm always appreciative of our loyal listeners, and I will get back to you later this week with yet another episode. And